The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Victor Dandridge, the hardest working man in comics, and you are listening to PVB Cast with John Orlando. Guys, I'm telling y'all it's the best thing on the entire interweb. Listen long, listen strong. John, it's all you, man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 300th installment of the PVD Cast. I am, of course, your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and thank you so very much for joining me on this extra special episode, this anniversary edition of the PVD Cast. I made myself a promise that I was not going to ramble on and on in the introduction of this episode, so I'm going to hold myself to it. I just want to say that when I started this podcast in December of 2012, never would I have thought that I would get to 300 episodes, but I have, and it's been an amazing journey, full of ups and downs. I've made some great friends, I've talked to some cool people. I mean, it's just been amazing, and I think that's the only adjective I'd like to use to describe my podcasting journey. Thanks to everyone who has listened to an episode. Thanks to everyone who has shared a social media post, told people about the PVD Cast. Thank you to everyone who has appeared on an episode of the PVD Cast. Again, a huge thank you. I am so ecstatic that I've made it this far and looking forward to the next 300. And with that, I didn't ramble too much, did I? See, I stuck to my promise. I did not ramble too much. But let's talk about my guest for this episode. And he is a gentleman that is a fellow podcaster who is based out of Boston. He has a great podcast called Duke Loves Wrestling. And as you can tell, Duke is a huge wrestling fan. So we talk about the industry. We talk about a couple of his other side projects, but we also really do hone in on one other avenue that Duke is very passionate about, and that is being an advocate for change in professional wrestling. Duke is keeping an eye on the WWE and AEW and other promotions, and just keeping an eye on them to make sure that they are being diverse, that they are giving opportunities to all types of people. And I know that may ruffle some feathers. But, you know, I appreciate the fact that Duke is willing to come on and be unfiltered and give his honest opinion and explain the reasoning behind his advocacy and the reason why he is not afraid to call people out and say, well, you promised this, but you gave us that. And I think that that's going to make for a very interesting conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. It was recorded about 3 weeks ago because you're going to hear us talk a little bit about the debut of AEW Rampage. So full transparency, we talked about 3 weeks ago. So before I get to my conversation with Duke, I need to let you know about a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. And I truly mean it. World's Greatest Comics has been awesome. They have treated me so well, and I love their sponsorship. I love their patronage. I love their support. So you should show some support if you can. And there's a couple different ways you can do that. If you're in the Central Ohio area, you could always stop by the store. They are located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. You could check them out online. They have a fantastic website, wgcomics.com. And they're even on Facebook, which they're pretty active on. Just go over to Facebook and search for at WGComics. And you'll learn that they have tons of everything that you need for your comic book fandom. Whatever you throw out there, if you say, hey, do they got Funko Pops? Yes, they do. Do they got single issues? Yes, they do. Do they have back issues? Oh my God, they got like hundreds of them, folks. They got it all. Trust me. So once again, If you get the chance, show some love. Give your patronage to World's Greatest Comics, once again located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, WGComics.com, and at WG Comics on Facebook. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Duke from the podcast Duke Loves Wrestling.
This is the man of the hour, the man with the power, too sweet to be sour. That's right, the Duke, host of the Duke Loves Wrestling podcast. And I am so excited to be here with my man, my brother from another mother, John Orlando. What is going on, sir?
You know what? That was one awesome introduction. And some of my longtime fans are going to say, wait a minute, how did he get away with doing it himself? You're always introducing the guests. But you know what? I can't top that, Duke. I can't.
Well, John, you know, I'm one of those guys that I like to make an entrance. You know what I mean? And I think that's what gets me in trouble a little bit here, because for better or worse, you're going to know that the Duke is in the building. That's for sure. But seriously, I feel honored and privileged to be on your show today.
Well, thanks for taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. So let's start off. You have lots of podcasting projects, but let's start off by talking about Duke Loves Wrestling. And could you give the listeners a little bit of the history of that podcast?
Sure. You know, John, Duke Loves Wrestling started off by accident, to be honest with you. I'm a social media guy, right? I'm a social media guy. I've always been involved with social media going all the way back. Because I'm a computer guy. I was part of that generation that typewriters were kind of getting phased out and word processors were getting phased in. And I grew up in a family where, you know, my father in particular was really into gadgets and things like that. So I learned how to type at a very early age. And I learned how to get interested in computers at an early age. Because of that, when the internet became available to families, we were one of the first families on our street to actually have the internet. So, you know, going all the way back to chat rooms and things like that, man, message boards, I was involved in all that stuff as a young person and just kind of growing up with the internet, so to speak there. So fast forward to Facebook, I would always talk about pro wrestling whenever there was a TV show or a pay-per-view. And friends and their friends, they would tell people, hey, this guy who's really into wrestling, you should check out his Facebook. So I just assembled a real core group of about 100 people who every Monday night or anytime SmackDown was on, anytime a pay-per-view was on, they would check in on my Facebook page and give their opinions and things like that with me. And it got to the point where Facebook started telling me, you can't be tagging so many people. This is spam. And I'm like, well, this is not spam because they want to be tagged. So eventually they would not let me tag people on a Monday night. Raw is literally just about to start. And they told me, nope, you've been spamming. Either create a group or we're just going to suspend your page entirely because you can't keep tagging so many people. So I scrambled because I'm like, oh my God, everybody wants to talk wrestling and they come on my page and now I can't do it. Fine. I created the page, Duke Loves Wrestling. Everybody came in and they were like, oh, this is pretty cool. And it's, you know, ever since we have our private wrestling group. But out of that, a lot of the old time wrestlers and what have you started checking in the group and they were invited because, you know, they're a friend of a friend or what have you. And it turned into, you know what? Maybe I should interview some of these folks. You know, maybe we should have conversations that we're having in the group. Maybe we should do this on audio and record this because, there's some great stuff happening. So the podcast was really born out of that. And it went from something that was just a hobby to, you know, legitimately another job that I have, so to speak here, and I'm not saying that in the negative way either. It's actually been very, very worth my time to do this. And I'm appreciative of it. But yeah, that's the history of Duke Loves Wrestling.
I appreciate that you used that term wrestling because that's something I heard growing up as a kid. I assume that you were probably in the same boat.
I absolutely was. You know, I'm a Boston, Massachusetts guy, born and raised, still here. But my father is originally from Mississippi. And with that thick Southern accent, he would always talk about wrestling. You want to go to the wrestling matches, or you want to get a wrestling magazine. And it's funny because he would use pro wrestling as a tool to kind of keep me in line. So if you get your chores done, then you can watch wrestling. If you get an A on your spelling test, and mind you, I'm a young kid. We're talking kindergarten, talking first grade. But because I was so interested and so enthralled with this thing, it wasn't football. It wasn't baseball. It wasn't things like hockey, things that are a big deal here in Boston, which I do love still. You know, I am a sports fan in general. But there was something about pro wrestling, that captured my attention. So, you know, that was used as a bargaining chip to keep me out of trouble. And it's worked. It worked pretty well. But, you know, when I was naming the show, I wanted to name it something that would stand out. Name it something that would really separate itself in a manner that, from a branding and marketing standpoint, but also something that would be catchy enough that people wouldn't forget it. You know, so Duke Loves Wrestling, you can't miss it. You're not going to mix me up with anybody else. Even though since I've launched the show has been around for a little over 5 years now. We just celebrated the 5-year anniversary right after WrestleMania this year. There are a lot of other websites and shows that are incorporating wrestling in there, and a lot of them are spelling it the same way, which, you know, I take that as a compliment. You know, that's really the reason why I named it Duke Loves Wrestling as opposed to wrestling. I wanted to let people know because when you think wrestling, you're thinking about a specific type of pro wrestling. I wanted to appeal to those folks and let them know, yeah, man, you're going to get some of that in this show.
Who are some of your favorites, or even who are some of your favorites in current time that you enjoyed watching as a kid wrestle in the ring?
You know, John, my first memory of being alive is watching Ric Flair and Harley Race in the cage at Starrcade. I think that was 1983. So Ric Flair, I mean, he's somebody who he wasn't the fastest. He wasn't the strongest. He wasn't the tallest, but he was the hardest working. And he was the type of guy that would tell you, you know, I'm going to win. I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the champion. And then I'm going to go out. I'm going to eat the best food. I'm going to date the best women, and I'm going to have the best time. That type of verbal commitment, that contract that he would have with himself, you said it, now you got to go out there and do it. It's a major life lesson that I still hold near and dear to my heart. I mean, I truly believe that you have to set goals every single day and then hold yourself accountable to achieve them. It could be as simple as, you know, even though I'm working from home today, I'm going to iron my shirt. Like, go iron your shirt. Like, feel good about yourself. Be able to walk by the mirror and see yourself in a shirt that's not wrinkled and feel like somebody. You know what I mean? Little stuff like that. It doesn't have to be grandiose, but from a mental and emotional standpoint, they matter. So I definitely took that lesson from Flair, and he's definitely one of my biggest inspirations. I also took other lessons from Flair. You know, the guy, unfortunately, has had some issues financially and with alcohol and things like that. So I've learned to stay away from those trappings, so to speak. But he's definitely somebody that I hold near and dear to my heart and I have a lot of respect and admiration for, because he's been a good example in general of how to be a human being. It's okay to fail. It's okay to lose. You dust yourself off and you get back right out there and continue to prove that you're good enough to rebound. It's another lesson I learned from him. It's very important because we all are going to fail at some point in life. I think we all fail at certain things every single day, you know, but that's okay. One of the most devastating things that I experienced as a kid, because I was also a Hulkamaniac, just like anybody else would be, you know, in the early 80s. When Hogan lost to the Ultimate Warrior, that was one of the most devastating things that I ever experienced as a kid, because I didn't realize that Hulk Hogan could lose. So to see this larger than life character, this superhero, get defeated clean, it was like, oh my God, is he going to die? Like, whoa, this is crazy. And I cried. I literally bawled my eyes out. It was a traumatic experience to watch Hulk Hogan lose, because that didn't happen. And everybody in the house, it's funny, it was a pay-per-view party because we always had pay-per-view parties at the house. Everybody in the house was like laughing, like, kid, Hulk Hogan's not dead. He just lost a wrestling match. So what? He'll be back next week. Like, relax. And it was embarrassing because it's like, you know, here I am, this young kid, and I'm crying over this thing. And it's like, wait, so it's okay to lose? It's okay for Hulk Hogan to lose? Wait a second. So from that moment on, I actually stopped being a Hogan fan. Because I never wanted somebody to have that type of emotional hold on me to that degree where I would involuntarily react in such a manner to something negative happening to them. I realized at that moment that it was like, you know, Ric Flair is more my speed, because at least when he loses, it's okay because I know he's going to come back and he's going to continue to be the greatest. And he'll even tell you, you know, you got me that time, but I'll be back. And, you know, you didn't win, you cheated, whatever. From a psychological and emotional standpoint, that was easier to swallow. Ric Flair was a human being, and it was easier to relate to that as opposed to this mythical figure that told you to say your prayers and eat your vitamins and talked about the man upstairs, and he wore a crucifix. So, you know, really, and he wrapped himself in the American flag. Like, this was just over the top grandiose stuff that for a young kid, it was built up too high. It was too much. You know what I mean? So that was an interesting life lesson too, that to this day, you know, we learn later on about the man, Terry Bollea, some of his issues there, which definitely doesn't help. But yeah, man, that Ric Flair was definitely more human and therefore more relatable and easier to digest than even a Hulk Hogan. Then you have somebody like Manami Toyota, which I feel is pound for pound, she's the greatest women's wrestler of all time, and she's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. She's my second favorite behind Flair. So innovative. She was beautiful. She was tough. She was somebody who could be vulnerable in the ring, still find a way to win. She's another one that could bounce back. Her ability to tell stories, it's unmatched. Second to none. She's just fantastic. She's not dead. I know I'm talking about her in the past tense, but she's retired. But Manami Toyota, if anyone has a chance to check out some of her stuff, you'll see some of the best wrestling you've ever seen in your life, especially her stuff from All Japan Women. Just fantastic. So those are my heroes, you know, growing up. Fast forward to today, and I look at somebody, I mean, obviously Daniel Bryan. I was at the first Ring of Honor show when he was the American Dragon. I saw him in the main event. I always have a soft spot for him because I just think he's fantastic. But I would say Omos, as they say in the WWE, Omos. I'm really into this guy. I love the way that they're developing him in the WWE because he's a giant who works like a giant. He's not doing some ridiculous flippy move. He's not doing stuff he shouldn't be doing. He's not hurting himself out there. Everything is high impact. There's facials. There's a focus on beating the hell out of his opponent. And it just makes sense. I don't have to think too hard about what this guy is doing. He's doing what he should be doing. I'm really, really high on that guy. And I think sky's the limit for him. He's probably the number one person that I enjoy watching the most right now. Another person is Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa, that's my sister, man. I have a lot of respect and admiration and just love for Thunder Rosa and her family. She is a tremendous person. She is a fantastic wrestler with a huge heart. And what I love most about her is that she dedicates a lot of her personal time to doing things within the community, helping other people, which I think is really, really special. And she does that in wrestling as well. I mean, she has her own wrestling school with Jazz and Rodney Mack and her husband, Brian, the Dog Pound Dojo. She has her own wrestling promotion, Mission Pro Wrestling, which is a women's promotion. And you see a lot of her students, she's allowed them and helped them get featured in AEW. She just signed a new contract with them. So, you know, Thunder Rosa is somebody who's so selfless. She's always doing for others. And she's such a badass in the ring as well. You know, I could watch her matches all day, every day, and twice on Sunday. So those are my four right there. Flair, Toyota, Omos, and Thunder Rosa for sure.
And that's a pretty impressive list. I agree with you on Flair, and I agree with you on Daniel Bryan, Thunder Rosa also. I'm not sold yet on Omos. I got to be honest with you. You hit the nail on the head. He's doing what a giant should do, because I think a lot of times you see individuals, whether they're super big, whether they're super small, doing stuff that they should not be doing, and it just doesn't suck me in as a fan and lets me release and just forget about the logic of it. You know what I mean? I think a good story has to be told in the ring, and it has to be told, and it has to be believable. Do you agree?
100%. I 100% agree. It has to be believable, and that doesn't mean it can't be innovative. You know what I mean? I mean, Manami Toyota, she was the first person. She invented the Hurricane Rana. I forgot what they call it. It's a particular type of, I think they just call it a Toyota version of the Hurricane Rana, where she, instead of wrapping her legs around you when you're facing her, you're facing away from her.
Oh, yeah.
And she gives you the Hurricane
Rana. The reverse Hurricane Rana, yeah.
Yeah, so reverse Hurricane. She created that move. So, and you know, people like Scott Steiner, as big as he is, once she did it, he started doing it for a period of time there in early WCW. My point is, you can tell great stories and you can stick to, for the most part, sound fundamentals and still be innovative in the ring. You got to do these high impact moves as a finish or as a high spot one time, and then you go back to telling the rest of the story. But all of this flippy, dippy, peanut butter, skippy nonsense, who can do the most flips in 5 minutes, that's just garbage. And unfortunately, you see a lot of people injure themselves because they're trying to do too much. You see a lot of these big guys and big girls in particular, they want to, everybody wants to do a dive. Everybody wants to try to do some flip, and they're breaking their necks out there. They're damaging themselves because it's illogical. It doesn't make sense. If I'm in a fight, which is what pro wrestling is supposed to be, it's a simulation of a fight, right? If I'm in a fight, I'm not going to be doing some damn corkscrew plancha or whatever the hell on you. Where am I going to end up? If my, you know, the person that I'm trying to beat up, they're just going to move out of the way, right? And then as I'm on the ground, they're probably going to kick me in the teeth. So I think we got to get away from all this flippy mania crap that we see all the time. And especially if you're a big person, you just shouldn't be doing that stuff. That's my opinion there.
Agreed, wholeheartedly. You know what? Let's talk a little bit about the indie scene. That's where a lot of our current superstars have come up through all the various different promotions that are out there. Do you have anybody you think that we should keep an eye on that's in the indies, maybe in the Boston area or wherever?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I think that it's an absolute disgrace that La Rosa Negra, okay, La Abusadora, she's the abuser, La Rosa Negra, she's currently the Mission Pro Wrestling Women's Champion. I don't understand why she's not on TV every week. I don't understand why these major promotions haven't signed her, because pound for pound, she's as good in the ring as anybody out there and a lot better than some of these people that we see on TV. So I would say at the top of my list is La Rosa Negra. I am so high on her. I just think that she's fantastic. Another person would be Layla Gray, which I know she's doing a lot of work with AEW recently. Layla Gray is a future world champion, man. I mean, she's a star. You can't look at Layla Gray and not be just completely focused on her, no matter who else is in the ring, no matter what else is going on. In fact, in AEW, when Mike Tyson came out the last time, he was slapping everybody's hands, and Layla was just in the crowd. And literally people were saying, who's that? I saw so many tweets and so many people were messaging me, who's that? And it's like, damn, you see that? I mean, she's a scene stealer. So I love, and she's solid in the ring, even though she's barely a year in the business, which is interesting. So shout out to Layla Gray. There's a guy down in Florida by the name of Certified Luke Curtis. He works like a vet. He works like somebody who's been in the industry for 10 plus years and what have you, but he's still relatively new in his own right. I got a lot of time for him, and I think that at some point, he's going to make a big enough splash that we'll be seeing him on TV on a regular basis. So shout out to Certified Luke Curtis. And then, you know, there are other people, Max Castellanos, who's over in SWE Fury. He and Moonshine Mantell, You know, these are both guys who wrestled. They were trained by the same guy that trained Daniel Bryan down in the Texas Wrestling Academy, Rudy Boy Gonzalez. Those two guys are blue chippers, man. And they've been feuding with each other for years. And you could take that match and put it anywhere, and it's going to sell out. I mean, they're just fantastic talents, just fantastic. So I got a lot of time for them. Lastly, a guy by the name of Malik Bosidi. I think Bosidi, pound for pound, is one of the most exciting stars on the indie wrestling scene today. And he works everywhere. I know he's based out of Florida, but he's come up here to Massachusetts. He's gone to the West Coast. I think he's even wrestled on Mars at some point. So, you know, shout out to Malik Bosidi. I think that's another one that people have to pay attention to because the dude is just talented. So I would say that's my little stable right there of people that I have a keen eye on and that I expect to continue to make some waves out there, not only on the indie scene, but eventually in the majors.
And that's what it takes. It takes these great independent promotions to foster talent and then move them on up the ranks, just like, you know, minor league baseball or minor league hockey, the same thing, you know? And it's great to see that the indies have, in the last 5, 6, 7 years, really flourished, because I think there was a time, especially in the early 2000s, where the indie scene was pretty abysmal, at least in my opinion.
Well, you're right about that. And I think part of the reason why is because we found ourselves in a situation where you had too many young people teaching each other. And also too many people who were nobodies that never made it, who were stealing people's money, basically. You know what I mean? I feel very strongly about this, John. And, you know, I started off Duke Loves Wrestling, as I told you, talking to these old timers. A lot of these old timers were training people. And these are people who are on TV, you know, guys like Rudy Boy, Dusty Wolf. They were on WWE Wrestling Challenge. They were in the NWA. They grew up in the territory system. Steve Do It To It Cox. You know, guys like this, the Black Nature Boy, Scoot Andrews. These guys had been there and done that, you know, and they seen it all, and they actually had experience. They've been on TV. They made their bones. They were well respected and trusted by the major promotions and their peers. Those are the type of people you should be learning how to wrestle from. Not Johnny, what's his name, that no one's ever heard of, out of some beat up barn or something like that, who's going to charge you, you know, $5,000 to essentially just beat the hell out of yourself and then tell you, oh, I don't know if you got it, kid. It just doesn't make any sense. So I think that with anything else, you really want to go to a reputable source for whatever you do. You're not going to go down the street to some random guy to fix your ignition for your car. So you shouldn't be going to some random person to learn how to wrestle. Go to a certified professional and you will end up better than you started. And you can see it out there. When you look at people who succeed in wrestling, more often than not, they have the proper training. That's what makes them who they are today. Look at Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston, who, you know, he grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He learned how to wrestle out here, chaotic wrestling. A guy by the name of Handsome Johnny was one of his trainers, right? And Handsome Johnny has been around for a while, and he is just a badass wrestler and what have you. Kofi ends up becoming WWE World Champion. He's been a tag team champion. He's been Intercontinental Champion. I think he's been U.S. Champion. Highly decorated, right? Handsome Johnny's in the WWE today as well. You know what his name is? Ivar. He's part of the Viking Raiders, right?
Okay.
So a lot of people don't realize that this guy, he was called Handsome Johnny for most of his career, and he's been a trainer for a while. Sasha Banks is another one who's gone through his training before. So it's okay. You're talking about reputable people who know what they're doing. And we know Ivar knows what he's doing. Look at the Viking Raiders every week on TV, if you don't believe me. So, again, it's all about making sure that you're tapping into the right training and you're getting the right schooling so that your fundamentals are down pat, so that when you get in trouble in the ring and you have to figure out how to get the crowd back, when you got to figure out how to extend a match and what have you, you can do that without looking like a fool, and you can do it safely, most importantly.
Well, we've talked about veterans here for the last couple of minutes, and I wanted to ask you, Duke, that you've interviewed quite a few folks for Duke Loves Wrestling, but one interview I was very interested in is because I remember this gentleman, and I don't know if many wrestling fans do remember him, but you interviewed Reggie B. Fine. So if you don't mind me asking, how did you cross paths with Reggie, and what was the experience like sitting down and chatting with him?
Well, first and foremost, shout out to my brother, Reggie B. Fine. You know, like Reggie B. says, man, he'd rather lie for you than lie to you. Reggie is a solid dude, man. Really appreciate talking to him. It was Rodney Mack and Jazz. I have a very good relationship with the two of them. And a lot of people don't know this, but part of their resurgence was due to being guests on Duke Loves Wrestling. And that's not a surprise. That's happened with a lot of people who time may have forgotten or who's not in the media cycle, so to speak. When they came on my show, that immediately thrusted them back into the spotlight. And then from there, they were able to, you know, remind people of who the hell that they are and make some money. And you know, now they have a wrestling school. And Rodney Mack, I mean, it's like he's 20 years old again. He's a champion in SWE Fury. I think he's their TV champion, which is pretty crazy. Jazz just finished up another tour with Impact Wrestling. Can you believe that? Jazz. You know, she was out there teaming up with Jordan Grace, which is fantastic. So because of their experience, not only being on the Duke Loves Wrestling podcast, but their experience with me personally, where I'm figuring out ways to remind people that they exist and that they matter, they suggested me to Reggie B. Fine because he said he wanted to start getting his name out there. He hadn't done too many interviews before. So they said, yeah, talk to Duke. So Reggie hits me up and we did our first interview and it was a huge hit. So, you know, we've done it a bunch of other times since then. And Reggie B is a good dude, man. And what I like about him is that he's very honest. Not only will he tell you about some of the figures in wrestling who are no good, racist, drug addicts, what have you, but he'll also fess up to things that he's done wrong. You know, the fact that he was the guy who was out getting the drugs half the damn time. Like he said, I'm not going to throw you under the bus. If I throw you under the bus, I'm going to be right there next to you. So the wheel rolls over me too. So that's why I really respect and appreciate Reggie B. And it's just a hell of an experience anytime that I have him on the show, because that dude is unfiltered, man. He will tell you things that you have probably never heard before about some of the biggest names in wrestling. And it's the truth. It's Reggie B, man, and no one can take that away from him. So it's a good dude, really good dude.
Do you have a dream guest that you would love to sit down and interview?
You know, I do, and it's funny because I don't get this question much. And I know that it'll come as a surprise, but Linda McMahon. I would love to interview Linda McMahon because we hear a lot from everybody else in the family but her, as it relates to the ins and outs of the WWE and what it's been like to take this family business and turn it into the standard in an industry. You know what I mean? It's really fascinating. A lot of people don't realize that at one point she was actually the president of the company. And we know that Linda is no fool. I mean, she ran the Small Business Administration. So here is somebody who is highly competent, highly successful, and yet we don't know much from her perspective. That is my ultimate guest. And I feel like if Linda McMahon was a guest on Duke Loves Wrestling podcast, it would be a hell of an experience because people would learn things that they never knew, not just about the company, but about that family in general there. So definitely, Linda, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are, hit me up. Let's make it happen.
I got to say, that was a curveball, Duke. I never would have thought Linda McMahon, but that's a fantastic guest.
I mean, I think that, you know, part of my issue, John, is that pro wrestling primarily has been a white male dominated industry. We know that. That's who started it. That's who still runs it today. And we forget that there are a lot of other people who have made positive contributions. I want to hear more from them. You know what I mean? I mean, and that's right, part of the reason right. Why I have so many women on my show too, because it's like, look, I'm sick of How many guys do I want to hear from about headlocks and what was their favorite match and to be part of and all this other nonsense? Let's hear from some of these women, man. Let's hear from some of these innovators in the industry because they exist. You know, one of the best things that's come along is that Lady Wrestler documentary that our mutual friend put together there. And in fact, you know what, John, I'm gonna switch things for a second here. I'm gonna put you on the spot. Why don't you tell everybody how you came in contact with me?
Well, it is because of the mutual friend that you mentioned, Chris Borne, the man that created the documentary Lady Wrestler, talking about Ethel Johnson, Babs Wingo, Marva Scott, and these brave African-American women who were on the cutting edge, so to speak, of women's wrestling back in the 1950s that even I didn't know anything about. And I'm kind of like a big wrestling nerd. So shout out real quick to Chris, great documentarian, great writer, good friend of the show. And, just going to throw a plug out there. You need to go on to Amazon, as I'm getting tongue-tied. Go on to Amazon, look for Lady Wrestler and watch it. If you're a wrestling fan, you won't be disappointed.
Agreed, 100%. I mean, and that's what I'm talking about. Those are the stories, and those are the people that we need to hear more from. And what's interesting about that Lady Wrestler documentary, Miss Ethel Johnson was able to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame because of the work that Chris Borne did with that documentary. He was able to highlight all of the hard work of these icons in wrestling that time had forgotten. And once that information was back out there, it was like, well, damn, we need to put Miss Ethel in the Hall of Fame. Like, Jesus, she's amazing. She's an innovator. So it there's something about not just storytelling. There's something about taking someone who time has forgotten and shining a big spotlight on them and reminding people that they matter and helping that person or those persons live forever. And I think that is a very important responsibility that we have as the people who are helping others tell their stories. I take that very seriously. And I have a lot of respect for others who take it as seriously as I do and go out of their way to do things like what Chris Borne did. So again, shout out to him and shout out to you, John, for talking about it.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Duke for just one moment to remind you about the great sponsor of the PVD cast, World's Greatest Comics. As you know, they've got it all for your fandom, whether you're talking single issues, collections, graphic novels, back issues, toys. They got it all, okay? They got it all. So you can check out the store by stopping by. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their website, and they're even on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics. And if you interact with anybody from the store, please let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD cast. Well, let's dive into a topic that I know, Duke, is going to be one that you're very passionate about, and it goes right along with what we've been talking about with Miss Ethel Johnson, is that you have been a very strong advocate for diversity in wrestling. And, you know, over the last 6, 7, 8, 10 years, we have made significant strides in the industry, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So I'm going to ask you, what do you think still needs to be done in wrestling to be more inclusive, to be more diverse?
Well, respect to you for even bringing this question up, because a lot of people are afraid to touch upon this stuff, which is an embarrassment, especially you websites out there, and you know who you are. You do not talk about this enough. And I think it's ridiculous because you can't hide from it. So one of the things about the wrestling industry that to this day is still a major issue is sexism. We have women who are fantastic athletes who people are willing to pay to see compete. And we see it in the WWE, if we're going to talk on a large scale here, women can main event WrestleMania. Women can be your face of the company, your main spokespeople, and do a great job at it. So why the hell do we get so few women's matches across the board out there? It doesn't make sense to me. You know, You can't have a three-hour show or two-hour show and we only get one women's match. That's embarrassing. And that lets me know that you don't respect women's wrestling. You don't respect the women that you have in your locker room when you do things like that. Because at the end of the day, those people who are on TV the most often, especially the ones who are winning matches more often than not, those are the people who, from a market value standpoint, they command the most money. They're able to renegotiate their contracts. So when their contracts are up, they're able to ask for more money and get it. They're the ones who are getting the merchandise, the action figures, the T-shirts and things like that. They're the ones who are able to support families for generations because their hard work is being acknowledged on the highest level. There's no reason why those opportunities can't be opened up for more women. So, and I'm talking to you in particular, AEW, Tony Khan, Billionaire Tony, ATM Tony. You're doing a really poor job with the women, man, because you have the talent on your roster, but you're not respecting them by featuring them more, especially on TV. So I call them out every day on that issue, and I'm not going to stop until it changes. And for all of you out there that says, well, Duke, you know, you calling them out, what does that matter? Big Swole, Thunder Rosa, Holidead, who's had some matches. I can go on and on and on and on about the women who I have highlighted and I have pushed hard for who eventually have actually made it into AEW. So don't tell me that the advocacy is not working. I can name, you know, the majority of the black male singles wrestlers in AEW did not exist the first year. They were not in that company the first year. They were not being used that first year. They are there because we put the pressure on that company and say, hey, where are all the black wrestlers at? To the point where even Cody Rhodes was like, yeah, man, we got a problem in the industry where, you know, for some reason, black male wrestler is not really visible enough and something has to be done about it. Well, thanks for acknowledging the problem, Cody, but now we need to take it a step further and actually do something with the ones who you have brought onto the roster. But it's the advocacy. It's the calling out the issue, and it's the sticking to the facts. You know, these are the records of all of your wrestlers. Why is it that the top of your card, top 10 people on your card are white males, and the bottom 10 people on your card are black males, and the win-loss records are complete opposites of each other? What the hell is that about? You know, so this is the sort of stuff that I think that needs to change. We need more opportunity for women. Black male singles wrestlers need more opportunities for them. In a general standpoint, make it an inclusive and equal playing field. When you do that, then the cream absolutely rises to the top. Don't tell me that fans won't pay to see women. Don't tell me that fans won't pay to see black wrestlers in the title hunt. That's just not true. So in 2021, if you have a wrestling company and women are still being marginalized and you don't have any black wrestlers who you're featuring as a top star in the company, then I say to you that you're doing it on purpose. And whether you realize it or not, you have a significant sexist and racist bias. There it is.
You know, and not to mention, too, that I feel sometimes, and I know the listeners at home are going to say, boy, you're ragging on AEW a lot. And that's true. But I think one of the things we can certainly say, Duke, is that the WWE caught on. You know, the WWE has improved their women's division. All right. It's not what it was in the 90s, where it was a bunch of lingerie models who couldn't do anything. You know, they've actually gotten on the program of, we're going to feature a couple of women's matches on a SmackDown or on a pay-per-view or whatnot. So they're improving things. Not saying that it's perfect over there. But AEW sold us this bill of goods that we were going to be inclusive, that we were going to present a more sports-based product, that we were going to do all of these things. And yet I don't know if the proof is out there that they are doing those things. What do you think on that topic, that AEW has promised us certain things and they're still not fulfilling them?
I don't say this as a joke. I don't say this to put myself over. I say this because it's a fact and it can be looked up. It's well documented. I am the most consistent voice as it relates to AEW making promises that they have fallen short on. I was calling them out from day one on these issues, and I haven't stopped. it's just everybody else is starting to catch up. Because the main thing that I would get was, well, give it time. And they're brand new, which I don't even understand that. I need to give you time to not be racist and not be sexist. Like, what, in 2019, 2020, 2021, why? Why do you need time to not be those things? That doesn't make any sense, especially when you marketed yourself as being so woke, you know, so with it, so with the times, when they're just far from that. So yeah, absolutely. They've fallen very short of what they've promised. Let me tell you something. A lot of people misunderstand something here, and I want to make sure that we're clear about something. The WWE has been called out for all of these same issues. If you go back to any episode of Duke Loves Wrestling, you are going to hear very specific and pointed criticism of the WWE. Go back to the very beginning about racism, sexism, CTE issues. You're going to hear that stuff, well documented. I mean, I've had top news items on all of your major wrestling websites. When Manny Fernandez, you know, said that he told Vince McMahon to go F himself because Vince wanted him to do a racially insensitive gimmick. When Rodney Mack talked about racist issues happening in the ECW and WWE locker rooms, right? We can go when Big Vito Lagrasso talked about the concussion lawsuit and the CTE issues and things like that and his battles with the WWE over that issue. The WWE has been called out ad nauseum on all of this, on my platform, and will continue to get called out ad nauseum on all this on my platform. It's not about favoring a promotion over another. I got people that I care about in all these promotions. It's about the issue. And one of the things that the WWE has done is they got tired of making excuses. So they started doing the things that they've been called out the most on. And they're not perfect, as you said, but they're doing a hell of a better job than the quote-unquote alternative AEW, which, quite frankly, they've made it clear that they're marketing. I mean, they've said it in so many words that they're not trying to pick up a casual fan. They have a very specific fan that they've targeted. Unfortunately, this is the angsty, maybe socially awkward white male who is within whatever their key demo is, 18 to 35 or what have you. And that's great. It's great that you're marketing to that particular fan. The problem is pro wrestling, generally speaking, is about inclusion and diversity and variety. So don't tell me on one hand that you care about all those issues, and then you tell me on the other hand that you're marketing to a specific type of fan. That doesn't make any sense. So, no, this isn't a pile on AEW thing. If they would just do the right thing, and the few times that they have, I mean, when they had women in the main event, Thunder Rosa versus Dr. Britt Baker, I thought that was fantastic. And if you go and you look at my messages or hear anything that I said on my podcast at that time, I put them over for that. You know, when they had more than one women's match on Dynamite, which they've done twice since Dynamite's been around, I put it over. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not going to sit here and ignore when they do the right thing, but I damn sure am not going to ignore when they do the wrong thing. So you're going to hear from me one way or another until things change. And then when it changes, I'm going to continue to highlight the fact that you've changed and you're doing the right thing, which is what you see from me in regard to WWE quite often, because I want to remind them that I'm paying attention. And I want to remind them that just as hard as I went when you were effing up, I'm going to go equally as hard when you're doing the right thing because I want it to continue. That's the way it goes.
Do you think with the addition of Rampage for AEW that that's going to help with this situation? Because you now have two more hours that you have to fill where you're going to have people, African-American wrestlers, gay wrestlers, women wrestlers. Are you going to have another time slot to fill that may improve the situation a little bit? Or do you think it's just going to be more of the same?
My first question is Rampage 1 hour or 2 hours? I was under the impression that it was 1 hour.
It might be. You know what? While we're discussing it, I'll double check that. So go ahead.
Yeah, Duke. Please. Well, because and it matters. I'm this isn't semantics here. I'm serious about that because there's a big difference between a 1 hour wrestling program and a 2 hour wrestling program. Obviously, you can do more in 2 hours than you could do in 1 hour. Yeah, I'm looking at the TV guide. It's 1 hour. It's a one hour program.
I just found it too. So there you go. Yeah. It is 1 hour. My bad.
No, you're fine, man. They haven't necessarily done the greatest job of marketing this thing. They focused on the things that don't matter as much as the things that matter.
Yes, agreed wholeheartedly. Yeah,
which that's par for the course with them, unfortunately. No, they can't correct any of these issues with that show. It's in a piss poor time slot, 10 p.m. on a Friday night. I mean, people are either watching SportsCenter or they're watching the news. You know what I mean? There's not much of a TV audience at that time of night. Let's be honest, man.
I totally agree. In fact, I'll be honest, Duke. I was shocked. I watched AEW last night, Dynamite, and when they mentioned, oh, it's coming up Friday at 10, and I was like, wait, what the hell did you just say? 10? Who's going to watch that?
No one's going to watch that. It's going to fail. So here's the best part about that, because you see them do this with Dark Elevation, which, how ironic. You'll see women and people of color on a show like that, and they'll say, well, no one's watching, right? It's not our most popular show. It doesn't perform that well, so we can't justify doing more. And it's like, well, if I set you up to fail and you fail, I can't be surprised that you fail. Like, I put you in a position to fail. It's not that you're not talented enough. You know what I mean? If a tree falls in the woods and no one is there to see it or hear it, then it never happened. So I think it's kind of ridiculous. You got a 10 p.m. time slot on a Friday night. You can put the most diverse whatever you want on that program. No one's going to watch it. So it's a failure. It's not going to, it definitely is not going to generate the same kind of money that Dynamite does, which means you could be the top star on that show, Rampage, and it won't matter. Until you are featured on Dynamite as somebody who is a difference maker, a top contender for a championship, no matter what division you're in, you are not going to be able to command the big money. One of the things that AEW said is that women are going to make equal pay to the men. And then they clarified that later. They had to walk it back a little bit. And they said, well, you know, if they're comparable to the men, whoever their male equivalent is. Well, who the hell is the male equivalent to Chris Jericho in AEW? I mean, the female equivalent. Who's the female equivalent to even a Christian Cage? Who's the female equivalent to Miro? So, you know, to Moxley. So it's this half-hearted set you up to fail situation. Women aren't featured in a manner, and they're not hiring women who have that type of experience to be able to pay them top dollar. And they're not featuring women in a manner that will put them in a position where they can command top dollar. So ultimately, the men are making more money than the women. Of course they are, because that's the way that they set up their own system. You set them up to fail. So that TV show, you can make it as diverse as possible. You can put as many women as you want, as many black male singles to win matches if you want. It's still not going to be a difference maker because it's not their bread and butter show.
You know, Duke, we could sit here for the entire day and probably talk about this topic. And I do thank you very much for being open and honest and whatnot. But I do want to fit in a little bit with the time we have remaining, talking about your other podcasts, because you have two others that I think deserve to be discussed as much as Duke Loves Wrestling. So let's talk a little bit about Duke Loves Olympics, which is your newest podcast. You want to tell the folks a little bit about the history of that podcast and what they might expect if they tuned in?
Sure. In fact, I'll put it all together, man. I mean, Duke Loves Wrestling was the first show, first podcast, and that's really where I kind of honed my skills and learned how to do this podcasting stuff. So it's been a great experience because of that success. And I mean, I was able to get in with iHeart Radio early because of the success of that show. We partnered together on Tell Us the Truth, which is a show that, you know, I interview people from all over the world, whether you're a regular person on the street, whether you're an activist, whether you're an elected official. We talk about systemic racism and issues that people from marginalized communities, women, people of color, LGBTQ+, people from various religions, We talk about the issues that that they face and how they're able to overcome some of these issues. And then we talk about action, what every, the listeners can do in their own communities to help make their community as strong as possible and help get rid of some of these issues that we have when it comes to diversity and inclusion or the lack thereof. So, you know, that show is doing very well in its own regard. That's my bread and butter show. I reached out to USA Olympics because I wanted to interview Adeline Gray. She's my favorite Olympic wrestler. She's an Olympic freestyle wrestler, favorite in history. And instead of just, you know, granting me access to that interview, they granted me full access to everything. So, you know, I became a media partner for USA Olympics, and spun out of that is Duke Loves Olympics. It's a show that, you know, is still relatively new, but I cover what's going on in the Olympics. We just wrapped up the 2020 Olympic Games. The Paralympics starts on the 24th of August, so I'm going to be covering that. And then I'm going to be transitioning into the Winter Olympics. So, you know, there's a lot going on as it relates to that show as well. And I've been fortunate enough to get some great sponsorships for that show as well. So I had to do it. I enjoy doing it. It's fun to talk to world-class athletes and also the people that cover world-class athletes, people who are good enough to make the Olympics, but because of injuries, you know, like a Tammy Peoples, this is a woman who, she blew out both of her ACLs, which essentially made it impossible for her to make it to the Olympics. But before that, I mean, she's in the Hall of Fame here in Massachusetts for track and field, and she holds a bunch of records and things like that. So, and she became a track coach and helped the next generation of track stars and what have you. So to talk to somebody like that about the Olympics and the ins and outs of the sport of track and field, really fascinating, really interesting inside information. And you'll get some of that from Duke Loves Olympics. It's all about the storytelling with me. It's not just, you know, this one got a gold medal and that one got a silver, but really, what are the stories behind what you see in performance? You know, what really sets these athletes apart? What makes them matter most? So that's what you're going to get from Duke Loves Olympics. I'm proud of all the shows, man. And I just appreciate everybody out there who's ever listened, ever shared. One of the things that has made me continue to be successful at podcasting is that my listeners share my stuff. And the biggest feedback that I get the most is that the level of conversation is upscale. It's very intelligent conversation. It's very human. We don't insult anyone's intelligence, just like this conversation we're having now, John, where it's, whether you're a wrestling fan or not, you can relate to what we're talking about here, because there's some interesting stories that are relatable in general life that's being discussed. So that's what you get in the whole shebang, so to speak, there. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to plug all that.
You got it. Would you like to tell folks where they can keep tabs on you on, like, social media, you know, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all those outlets as well?
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, just go to the main joint. Obviously, you know, whether it's Tell Us the Truth, you can hear that on all the different major podcast outlets, including iHeart radio app, but there's also Spotify and Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes. Duke Loves Olympics, same thing. But Duke Loves Wrestling. I have a really interesting listenership. You know, it's worldwide. We have it's gone down a little bit, but we're resting at about 47% female audience for Duke Loves Wrestling. That doesn't make sense. It defies all logic for a pro wrestling and combat sports podcast. It's very unusual to have that much, that high of a female listenership. But the reason why, again, is because you don't have to be a wrestling fan to enjoy the conversation that's being had on the show. And when I have somebody on the show, we're not just talking about wrestling or just talking about MMA. There's a lot of food talk. There's a lot of life lessons talk. So because of that, people really enjoy the conversation. And really, again, it's fantastic that so many women listen to the show, because that's not an easy audience to capture in this genre. But you know, at Duke Loves Wrestling, R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's really my main social media as well. So if you have any questions or comments, you want to be on the show or you want to be on any of the shows, just hit me up there and let's talk.
All right. With that, Duke, thank you so very much for sitting down and chatting with me, man. It was awesome. Really appreciate it.
John, you are the man. You are the man. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on the show. I extend an invitation for you to be on Duke Loves Wrestling sometime. I think we have plenty more to talk about. So we can have some fun doing that. And, just much respect and appreciation to all of your listeners. Please, folks, be safe out there. Whether you're vaccinated or not vaccinated, whether you're a masker or not a masker, just be safe. All I care about, just be safe. Please be kind to yourselves. Be kind to others. When you're kind to yourself, when you care about yourself, when you love yourself, it becomes so much easier to extend that type of support and kindness and love to others. So start with yourself. Be kind to yourself. And then from there, please be kind to others. You know what I mean? And that's the last word that I'll leave for everybody there.
All right. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Duke, the man behind Duke Loves Wrestling, one awesome wrestling podcast that you need to check out. And I'm going to give some props to Duke because that theory that he laid out about how Ric Flair could be a role model and how Hulk Hogan being undefeated was not good for his psyche, that was one amazing tidbit. That was one amazing story. And Duke, thank you for sharing that and sharing your opinions on all things professional wrestling. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you have questions, comments, concerns about this episode, or quite frankly, any episode of the PVD Cast. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds of the podcast. Just search for @PVDCast. And if you want, you can even shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is my email address. And maybe you want to tell somebody about the PVD Cast. Well, let them know that there's a lot of different avenues where they can hear this great podcast. It's available over at my webpage, which is, of course, PVDcast.com. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. You know, like iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Apple or iTunes, you know, all those places. Just go to the search bar, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it. I don't know why, but you should be able to find it. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, subscribing means you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. I also do a weekly Facebook broadcast through the Facebook page. Once again, that's @PVDcast, where every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can tune in and you can listen to the week's episode and you can interact with me as I'm always there in the comments section answering questions if people have questions or comments or whatnot. It's a whole lot of fun, so you should check it out. Once again, that's Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through @PVDcast. On Facebook. Want to give a quick shout out to a couple of folks. First of all, I want to give a quick shout out to the Three Geeks podcast. Check out all of their great content over at their website, threegeeks.ninja. And also, I know we talked about him in our conversation, but I'd like to throw out a quick shout out to Chris Borne. He is an amazing filmmaker, a great writer, all around good guy. Definitely check out Lady Wrestler on Amazon Prime. It's his documentary about Babs Wingo, Marva Scott, Ethel Johnson, and this brave African-American women wrestlers who were true trailblazers in the sport of pro wrestling. It is, trust me, it is a really eye-opening and very well-done documentary. And Chris, hope all is well with you, man. So just wanted to give you a quick props as well. All right, I am going to go ahead and wrap things up here for the 300th episode. Once again, thank you to everyone who has supported this podcast, no matter if you're a guest, if you shared it out, if you told your grandmother at Thanksgiving dinner, whatever. whatever. I just wanted to say thank you one more time. And with that, I'm going to get on out of here. So I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous. Stay independent. And most importantly, stay safe and healthy. Production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2021.